Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Hawk Blogger Mornings. I am Brian Nemhauser. You can find me and all that we do here on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, at Hawk Blogger. And we got a fun one. It's been a while since we have reconvened what was the Seahawks draft roundtable and has become just a fun group of friends talking about Seahawks. We've got Rob Staton of the Seahawks draft blog. How are you doing, Rob?
Fantastic. Yeah. Very tired after staying up to watch the Packers throw that playoff game away. But looking forward to doing it all again tonight for the other games.
That's so true. I mean, I've been such a absolute slug the last 24 hours on my couch. And then this is a very big deal. I've gotten a lot of questions. I've gotten questions about, is Griff okay? Is he alive? I've gotten questions of like, are you and Griff having some sort of tiff? Is there a reason he hasn't been on lately? I'm like, no, Griff's fine. And this is proof of life. Griff from Seattle Overload, back and in color. How are you doing, man?
Here I am. I'm doing fine. The reason why I'm late is just a taste of why my appearance on computer screens near you has been so sparse of late. So I have an elderly dog, very senior dog. She's 15. And she's essentially incontinent right now. She's in good health otherwise. She's arthritic and incontinent. And these days she's having more, let's say, number twos in the house than outside. And I kind of know her, like, she's pretty regular at the same time. So I could kind of predict it now. I'm getting pretty good at it. But so I got up an hour ago, right? I was ready half an hour ago. And then she decided to have her little accident 15 minutes ago. Had she had it 25 minutes ago, I would have been sitting in the chair 5 minutes early. But also little things like that, because me and Maddie's schedule at Seattle Overload, we're 8 hours apart too. So we're like, just, you know, as Rob deals with, right, with us and everyone on this side of the pond, we're like 5 to 15 minutes like grace. And then beyond that, we got to go. We can't do it. And so we've sat down in the chair ready to record maybe four of the times that we've actually been able to do it. And we had to end it because I'm like 5 minutes late. He's 5 minutes late. And it's just right, you know, past the cuffs because of stupid little things like I got to go whip out the Nature's Miracle and get going on the rug. So you know, that's been our lives the past four or five months. But yeah, I'm happy to be in a chair talking about the Seahawks again, no matter what the podcast. So here I am.
We're happy to have you. And, you know, did not expect the show to start with incontinent stories, but I think it's a perfectly apt way to begin a conversation about what the Packers did last night after they had a 21-3 lead over the Bears, and they did all sorts of things down their leg in the second half of that game to absolutely blow it. Griff, did you see that game?
You know, I was able to watch, ironically, the first three quarters. I was not able to watch the fourth quarter. I saw the highlights, but yeah.
I mean, that Packers franchise has had some of the most epic playoff collapses.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, even in the third quarter, I was texting guys. I'm like, Bears are going to win this game. Bears are going to win this game. What the hell happened for you, from your perspective, from first half to the second half, you know, saving the fourth quarter? Obviously, you didn't see all that.
You know, I don't – it's big plays just swing games, you know. It's I felt like Green Bay was in control of the game. Well, at least they were playing better, you know. And – I think it probably speaks more so to the quality, like kind of that subjective quality of grit and resilience for the Bears. Cause I mean, it's every team has resilience, but probably what Ben Johnson has been able to institute, like if you can just keep your head in the game and if things break your way, you can capitalize it because not every team is able to capitalize when a lucky bounce does come their way, they're not ready to, you know, exploit that. And I think this Chicago team, I mean, they're a pretty interesting team. They're pretty undermanned defensively, especially up front. But for them to collectively kind of have that staying power is, I mean, that's why they won some games this year they probably shouldn't have won. They probably should have been a plucky 8 or 9 win team this year. And obviously they were much better than that. And this game kind of was a nice, you know, capper to their regular season. I think the party's going to end here pretty quick for them, but still, you know, I mean, it was, yeah, like kudos to Ben Johnson, really. Yeah. Green Bay should have won that game.
I mean, come on. I've got some stories about that. But Rob, I mean, what did you take away from that game about both the Packers and the Bears?
Well, my main takeaway was, is as much of a football cliche as it might be, that if you can't run the ball and you can't play defense, you ultimately are going to come unstuck in those games. And all the Packers needed to do, the kicks are the main thing. Like missing the field goal, missing the extra point is the main, I would say, probably the main reason why the Packers ultimately didn't hang on. But all they needed in that second half was one decently long drive, which was sustained by running the football, and they couldn't run the football. They just couldn't. So when they were needing drives to answer back to a touchdown from the Bears, their only real solution was to say to the quarterback, drop back and throw it. And obviously that really works on the golden touchdown, which is a remarkable play by him. But then at other times, it was stopping the clock. The Bears weren't burning the timeouts at the end. You know, you're getting into this situation where you're taking forever and you're getting delays of game, which then means you have to throw the ball in sort of first and 15, second and 15. So they created all sorts of problems. And then you don't have the running game. And then you combine that with a defense that has given up another 450 yards and just couldn't stop anything in that second half. And again, like, as much as they just needed one drive running the ball to kill a bit of clock, they also only needed one turnover or one stop or, hey, not allowing one fourth and 13 miracle play to happen or something like that. If they'd have got one of those, they would have won that game. So it's a few different things: special teams, defense, running the football, kind of things that we've moved away from in footballers actually talking enough about, as we have this relentless sort of focus on going for it on fourth downs if you're Greg Olsen and people like that. But actually those tried and tested things that you need to win an important game of football, those three facets of the game were really missing for Green Bay last night.
Yeah, I want your take on LaFleur, because, I mean, as soon as that game ended, pitchforks were out, and, you know, Green Bay fans, including Lil Wayne, was very vocal about that game, saying, you know, they got to get rid of the coach, fire LaFleur. And I've thought this is one of the better coaches in football for a while. And I was super impressed with him last year in terms of how he coached through Jordan Love's injury and what he was able to get out of Malik Willis. And how they changed their offense completely, how they kind of embarrassed the Seahawks in Seattle. And then, you know, this year, I think there's been a lot of injuries and a lot of stuff they've had to work through. They didn't, you know, necessarily excel, but if you're a Packers supporter, Rob, do you want LaFleur fired?
Well, you probably do immediately after that game because of the way it fell apart. And ultimately, this is a very much a European sports way of looking at things. When something like that happens, the instant reaction is to fire the coach. And that happens all the time. And anybody who follows the English Premier League will know how often coaches get fired. In the Scottish Premier League, you got a coach fired after about 8 games recently. Like this just happens all of the time. So there will be that sort of reaction. And look at how many coaching vacancies there are in the NFL right now. When a whole bunch of other teams are firing their coaches, Green Bay fans will say, well, why aren't we doing that? I think the key for me is sort of knowing what you're going to get as an alternative. Like, John Harbaugh has not won a Super Bowl for a long, long time and couldn't win a Super Bowl with Mike McDonald running his defense and with Lamar Jackson having an MVP season. So I don't really know why you automatically think that him coming to Green Bay right now is going to elevate this team any more than Matt LaFleur. So if you sort of take that one to one side and look at the other options, who is going to get you to a Super Bowl? Who is better than Matt LaFleur? That's the kind of question that Packers fans, once they take a step back, have to ask. That said, the time management and the constant getting into position to win these critical games under LaFleur and then blowing it, you know, they've had so many playoff mistakes. You do get to a point where you're wondering, is this guy ever going to deliver? Especially when you look at the other sideline and you've got a coach there who I thought a little bit lacking in class at the end of the game yesterday. Mm-hmm. But nevertheless, in his one season with the Bears, has already won a playoff game in exciting, enthralling fashion. And that is your biggest rival. So that adds to the mix. If Ben Johnson can come in and do this in Chicago, why don't we get a coach who can come in and do this? It's easier said than done, though.
I don't know about lacking a little bit of class. You might not have seen his post-game speech in the locker room about effing this and effing hating the Bears. It was pretty, I mean, I identified with it. I'm like, I like that energy, but I don't know if I want my head coach displaying that kind of energy. Griff, you know, I think Rob said it well. It's not just about, okay, what is this guy, like this guy hasn't done enough for us. It's, can you get better? Can you get better? And do you think that there's a lot of coaches that are going to be better than LaFleur if the Packers move on?
No. I mean, I think the sobering way to look at it is when you said there's all these vacancies around the league. When it comes to like a fan base is asking itself, should we fire our coach? You have to put yourself in the shoes of those, the fan base of those teams that just fired their coach and say, how quickly, how fast would they run toward hiring our coach if he got fired? And they would all hire LaFleur in a nanosecond. And they don't care, because the other fan bases are able to take the emotion out of the results of that loss last night. And they're looking at all the games that happened before that loss, the body of work, right? Whereas when you're, understandably, as Rob said, when you're a fan of the Packers, all you can think about is what just happened. So no, I mean, I don't think you can realistically do better than LaFleur. And then what is his playoff record? He's below 500, right? I think. Mm-hmm. But see, and me, for me though, I think he's become a victim of his own success, at least in how he's perceived. Cause a lot of those teams that do so well in the regular season, they shouldn't have done so well in the regular season. They did as well as they did because of LaFleur. You know, he's giving them wins above replacement or return on investment, or however you want to say it. And then once you get deep into the playoffs, when you're also scheming against Shanahan and McVay the past however many years, eventually the cracks in your system will start to show, and you can't really do anything about those that deep into the playoffs, that deep in January. So it's like, to me, it's one of those cases where the alternative isn't him being 6-3 in the playoffs as opposed to 3-6. The alternative is to them not making the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, I just, you know, fan. And then also, if all the years to give him grace, this would be the year, given the injuries to the tight ends, given the defensive roster regressed really heavily. Some players that have always been good are just bad now, like Rashawn Gary just isn't good anymore, which is weird. I think he's been battling injuries, though. I haven't kept up with the Packers too much. So the fact that this team, I know they had the losing streak to end the year, but I mean, LaFleur is the offensive play caller, right? And he still has a top five offense or top seven, whatever, right? And to me, it's like, okay, yeah, you're doing your job. You could have done better here and there, but like the backbone of what makes the Packers is still Coach LaFleur. So I can stomach and eat all the negatives, because I think that it was kind of reported on, but like he's kind of hard to be around when things aren't going well. Like he's not a rally the troops type of guy in the building, especially with his staff. But if he's winning, it's great. You know, he's got some drawbacks.
Those are fun, right? People.
You know, like he's not McVay or Shanahan. He's like a tick below them as a play caller head coach. Mm-hmm. But like, you're not going to find another Kyle Shanahan. You're not going to, in all likelihood, right? Even Ben Johnson may not prove to be as good as Kyle and McVay. He might be at the LaFleur tier for the rest of his career. And then the rest is just a function of, hey, did you happen to have all the right pieces in the right place this time this year, you know, with your roster and stuff? Did you get a little lucky, you know? Beyond that, it's like, enjoy the ride, man. Like, I'll watch a 12-5 team that burns out in the divisional round or NFC championship game for perpetuity. I don't care. Like, that's, even though I want the Super Bowl, right? Like, I'd still live with that, because look at the Mariners, you know what I mean? So, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, Rob, we're not going to spend all this time on the Packers, but it was a fascinating watch. And I mean, Jordan Love for me was another part of this story, because no one's talking about firing Jordan Love. Jordan Love was great in the first half. I thought he was awful in the third quarter, like awful. He looked like a scared little lamb, like out there. And this is a guy that, you know, people talk about as a top five quarterback in the league. And I don't know, what's your opinion of him? And his playoff performances have not necessarily left me feeling like, okay, this guy is the guy.
Well, that game was a microcosm of his career, isn't it? I mean, there's been several times this season and last season where he's played very, very well. And then the reaction on Monday, for example, after the game, from the national media and the international media has been to say, is this, you know, Jordan Love has arrived, like he is a legit quarterback. Does he deserve to be considered in like the tier below Mahomes that everybody, all the next best quarterbacks are labeled in? And then he'll have another game next week where he throws three interceptions. And there wasn't quite that extreme in this game, but I started this game thinking, I'd quite like the Packers to win because of the injury situation and, you know, having to play this week, bring them to Seattle. And then halfway through, I'm thinking, be careful what you wish for here. Like, Love's playing well. This is a team that hammered the Seahawks last season in Seattle. I'm not sure I want this. And then towards the end, I was thinking, no, I definitely do, because look how they're throwing this away. And was actually really disappointed, but I couldn't go to sleep, even though it was 5 o'clock in the morning, immediately after the game finished, because I was really disappointed that the Packers hadn't won, because I wanted to play them. And he is part of that. Like, there is definitely some natural talent there, as we could all see on you when he was at college. You know, there was definite potential at Utah State, and he has delivered some of that natural talent and that potential onto the NFL field. But in terms of consistency, in terms of can this guy win you, you know, two or three playoff games and get you to the promised land, there's still a major question mark there about him. And that game yesterday will have just added to that. Should do it.
Yeah, I was kind of all over the place. That's basically the topic of the show today, which we will start to get to in a bit, is like who the Seahawks are going to play next week, who we think is best for them to play, what the implications of those games are. But I was thinking about you, Griff, yesterday, because, you know, you are constantly dealing with people that are trying to come and dunk on you on Twitter. Like, I see it all the time. I see you going back and forth. Rob,
I love it.
Rob spars as well. I generally try to stay out of that because I find it very annoying. But I sent a tweet last night when it was 21-3. And I was like, okay, here's the look ahead lines for the Seahawks versus the Packers. Barring a miraculous comeback, Seahawks are going to rekindle their battle with the Packers in the playoffs. And I have all these people, like, old takes exposed, like coming to dunk on them. Like, the reading comprehension needs to improve on the, like I said, barring a miraculous comeback, which is what they actually had. So yeah. I guess my thought there was, I wasn't sure, to Rob's point, I wasn't sure that the Packers were the best thing for the Seahawks, who they have not played this season, who they haven't already scouted and done all their work on, who has a good coach who coached well up here. And might have a quarterback that was like playing at a really high level with a really good deep receiver room. Where are you on how big of a deal is it in your perspective that the Packers lost and that the Seahawks don't get to face them next week?
You're asking me.
Griff.
I'm actually with you, Brian. I thought the Packers would give them more trouble than the Bears would. I think that LaFleur's sword is still very sharp. It's just brittle, like with what he can do offensively, and like more sharp, say, than the Bears. I think that the way he attacks defenses, like if you're going to nitpick Seattle's defense, which is hard to do because it's the best defense in the league, in my opinion, in most people's opinion, he doesn't really attack defenses by attacking the perimeter from the perimeter. I mean, if he gets to the perimeter, it's from like the interior side of the inside of the field with the slots and the tight ends. And if you just look at Seattle's numbers, like they're relatively weaker, you know, defending targets from the slot 10 yards downfield versus, you know, from the outside, from the exterior. So, and given that LaFleur has given the defense trouble last year, even though it's a much improved defense still, you know, if you're just hoping for a marginally better matchup, that I would go Chicago. But I do think that Green Bay matched up with Seattle better than Chicago did. But I think either way, it didn't really matter too much. I think Seattle just can absorb a lot of, even their weaknesses being exposed, they can still absorb that for a game and win out in the end because they have so much going for them defensively.
Yeah. And to clarify for everybody, I probably should have started this at the front, but I get so excited to talk to these guys. We just jump right in. So The way things were working going into this weekend is the Seahawks are destined to play the lowest seed that wins. And so if the Packers had won, they were the seventh seed, you're guaranteed to face them. Now that they lost, you go to what's the next lowest seed. And the next lowest seed is the San Francisco 49ers, who play today. We don't know. So the Seahawks, one, they would have known their opponent if the Packers won yesterday. They do not know their opponent now. If the 49ers lose, which they are expected to, we will find out about that, then the winner of the Panthers-Rams game in this case would be their opponent, which is the Rams. And let's talk about that game, Panthers-Rams. Mike McDonald talks about 12 is one. I think the Rams might be doing the same mantra with Greg Olsen as their 12th addition on the group. Rob, did you catch that early game?
And spent a fair bit of time complaining about Greg Olsen on Twitter, as you did, with a number of different people. I find it staggering. Look, I have friends where I wasn't arguing, because it's not that kind of thing. We weren't arguing about Greg Olsen, but I was in a WhatsApp exchange with friends who were like absolutely determined to argue that Greg Olsen is the best thing in broadcasting. Like, he is amazing. Like, and I sat there and I was like, all he's done for the whole game is there was a moment when he was pitching to be the Rams tight end coach during the game. Like, there was the relentless praise, and eventually you just want to say, just tone it down a little bit, man. Especially when the Panthers all of a sudden were leading in the game, that became a huge story. And he was still talking about how amazing McVay was and amazing Stafford was and all of this stuff. And he just doesn't pause for breath. You know, as someone who is a commentator for my day job, I understand like what makes a good summarizer and what, or as we call them summarizers. I don't exactly know the exact terminology that you have for them. And what makes a bad one? You don't want one who doesn't say anything ever. You don't want to have to keep asking, like almost interviewing your summarizer throughout the whole game, asking them questions. You want them to sort of naturally join in and analyze and describe what's happening. Greg Olsen just talks all over Joe Davis, like for the whole game. And often what he's saying is a mix of, it's either praising the Rams or it's stating the bloody obvious. Like what they're going to do here is they're going to kick a field goal because that will put it. It's like, yeah, we get it, Greg. We've watched the NFL before. Or the other thing is explaining why said team should go for it on fourth down. It then fails and they just move straight on. Like, there's no like analysis afterwards. Go, yeah, well, with hindsight, was that the best thing to do there? Like, to go for it on the halfway line in the first drive of the game and then the Rams score a touchdown. There's no like self-reflection on that. So I found it very frustrating. But quickly on the Rams, I don't know what to make of the Rams, because part of me wants to say, do you know what? They went to Carolina a few weeks ago and struggled and lost, and they almost did the same thing again. Maybe for whatever reason, it's just this weird thing that their trips to Carolina are always going to cause them a bit of an issue, whether it's a matchup problem, whether it's something the coaches in Carolina have spotted, whether it's just the travel, the hotel's not very good. I don't know what it is. Like, but something causes the Rams maybe problems down there, and maybe I shouldn't read too much into it. And they did win, and they would give Seattle a game. And the other thing I was going to say was that last time they lost to Carolina, they still came to Seattle and pretty much dominated the game for three quarters. So they've shown they can lose there, then come to Seattle and play well. But on the other hand, there are so many things about that Rams performance that we've seen now for multiple weeks, especially defensively, where I'm kind of thinking, I don't know what to think. I don't know whether to fear the Rams or actively root to play them in the next round. I'm not sure what the best thing is for Seattle. And I think I'll probably feel that way right up until the first kickoff happens next weekend if we're playing them.
Griff, did you get a chance to watch this game?
Yeah. Yeah, I did. I was able to watch it.
So, I mean, one of the things about this game for me, like, we'll talk about, I think, a number of aspects of it because it is interesting, is that the Rams get Quentin Lake back. And I'm a huge believer in Quentin Lake. I think he's a very, very good player. I think he's a key to how they play defense. I think he's their closest thing to a Nicky Minwori. Their defense had been struggling. So I thought, okay, he's going to be a big part. He was terrible. He was terrible in this game yesterday. And they gave up 31 points to a absolutely terrible Panthers offense that had 40 yards passing against the Seahawks not that long ago. Mm-hmm. And now, if you look over since week 13, they're giving up an average of 28.3 points a game. This Rams defense used to be like top two or three.
Yeah.
What did you think of the Rams defense? Everyone's going to talk about the Rams offense. What did you think of the Rams defense?
It's just the that regression just shows that they're always like D-line heavy. They're a very top heavy or maybe bottom heavy defense. Just their back seven doesn't have a lot of juice in it. And I think it's more, I mean, they're good. They're solid talent wise, but they don't have overwhelming, like, I don't think they have a blue chip. Like, I like Cam Crow, I like Cam Kitchens, but they're kind of, you know, fringe Pro Bowler types at their very best type thing. And their careers are, trajectories are pointed up, but you know, you compare their back seven talent to the Seahawks and it's just, you know, almost night and day. And I think this was Shula, I think it's this regression has been demonstrative of how much Shula's been covering up, and now it's just like, all right, the dam's starting to break a little bit and there's just not a whole lot he can, I mean, you can only play the smoke and mirrors game for so long. Like, they're really disciplined secondary, but just, you know, their ability to play the catch point isn't very good. They don't have a lot of speed back there. It's been impressive what he's done with the cornerback room. But, yeah, eventually it's just with enough rolls of the dice, you start to see those weaknesses. So I think it's just that. Like, this is probably, if anything, this regression should have happened earlier in the season. And it was just Shula preventing that. And, you know, again, playoffs, you get game plans so hard that, you know, if you have exploitable weaknesses and you face a competent coaching staff, it's going to happen. Canales is a good play caller. He's a good game planner and all that. So, you know, it'll just catch up with him eventually. And I think that's what we were seeing.
Yeah, Rob, I've been talking about this, you know, all week last week, where I was like, are we sure it's the worst thing for the Seahawks to get the Rams first? Like, are we sure about that? Because obviously the Rams are I think they're the best team outside of Seattle. And they've obviously given Seattle trouble and vice versa. But you're going to be playing, you'd be playing a team coming off an East Coast trip on a shorter week while you're fresh, while they haven't seen any of your self-scouting adjustments that Mike McDonald's staff have made this week. You know, is it possible that this would be a good time to get the Rams versus waiting for another week?
Well, one thing, I didn't remember this last time, because when we were the NFC champions in 2013 and 2014, I never really worried during this particular week or spent much time sort of fretting over who the Seahawks are going to play in the next round. And I think that's because the LOB were that good and we were that good at home that it kind of felt like it didn't really matter who we played. You kind of expected to win whatever. And this is a different team, obviously. It's not going to be as good as the LOB, because the LOB will probably one of the greatest teams that's ever been crafted. So I've spent a bit more time sort of fretting and wondering who I want and who I'd prefer to play. And I think you can probably make a case for and against anything other than it would have been amazing to play the Panthers. Like, apart from that, you can make a case for or against any of the other teams. And when it comes to the Rams, if they'd have played them in the NFC Championship instead, you could have said, well, they had to travel all the way to Carolina, and then they had to come back, and then they had to travel all the way to Philadelphia, and then come back, and then it's Seattle, and can they win three road games to get to a Super Bowl? It's not many teams you can do that. You know, that's a case for playing them at the end. You've just made the case there for playing them now. You've had a week to prepare. They've just gone and played there, and the quarterback's hit his finger on a forearm, and maybe that's going to be a bit of an issue there. The defense continues to struggle. They looked almost, I don't know if you read the body language of the Rams staff and players at the end of that game, they almost felt a little bit flat. There was no sort of big celebration. They almost looked a little bit disappointed that they'd allowed it to be a close game. And I did sort of convince myself it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world if they have to play this team, maybe. But then, you know, I just, if they were playing the Rams, I would be nervous as anything playing that team. For what you said, they are the best team, I think, aside from the number one seed in the division, in the conference. And Sam Darnold's had six interceptions against this team.
Mm-hmm.
Stafford and Puka Nacua, frustratingly, is just playing at an unbelievable level at the moment. Devontae Adams did not look healthy, though, by the way. That's a good thing, I think. He came back and did not look healthy. So I don't know. But I think after sort of worrying so much last night about who I wanted the Seahawks to play, I think I'm just coming to the conclusion of it's not worth worrying about. They're going to play who they're going to play. Mm-hmm. And it's up to this team now to go out there and try and play as clean a four quarters of football as they can, limit those turnovers, play a good game of defense. I'm investing in the faith in what you've been saying, Brian, about the bye week for Mike McDonald. I'm hoping that that's going to be a difference maker for them, that they can have a good rest and just win. Like you've got two home games. Whoever you end up playing in the first game and hopefully a second game, just hold serve, get the job done. Doesn't have to be pretty.
Yeah.
But having watched those two games last night, this is the most unpredictable, crazy NFL season I can remember. So I'm expecting drama and anything could happen. I would not be shocked if this time next week we're all sat here having a debrief on one and done. And I wouldn't be surprised if we were sat here thinking, what were we all worrying about playing the Rams? Like they won 23-10 or something like that. Like anything could happen and nothing would surprise me at this point.
Yeah, I mean, the possibilities for people that haven't done all the permutations are, if the 49ers win, the Seahawks will play the Rams. The Seahawks will play the 49ers, and the Rams will travel to Chicago. And so if you beat the 49ers, then you'd likely host the Rams. Now, I personally think the Rams would beat the absolute breaks off of the Bears. I don't think it would be. I think it would be a way bigger margin of victory than they had against the Panthers, personally. So you could have that as a path, or if the 49ers lose, you'd have the Rams coming to Seattle this week, and then the winner of Eagles would travel to Chicago in the NFC Championship. Personally, like I'll take door B. Like, let's get the Rams done, and then I think the NFC Championship would be a step down in competition. Griff, am I crazy that the Rams are a better team than either the Eagles or the Bears?
No, I think the Rams are the better team, but I like your idea of kind of getting them over with early because theoretically, you know, you get less healthy as the playoffs go on. So catch them when you're healthiest. And, you know, as you said, maybe Adams will get healthier as the playoffs go on. I don't know. So catch them at their weakest, catch them at your strongest type of mentality. You're going to have to face a tough team at some point anyway. So I don't know.
That's what the playoffs are.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, this, speaking of, Greg Olsen and his infatuation with the Rams, he, as soon as things started going south, he had to find a reason, and it was all because Stafford hit his finger or hand on a throwing motion, even though he got no attention from trainers, no treatment whatsoever. It was so serious that it required absolutely no intervention at all. And like he threw plenty of fine passes, but it only could have been because he was hurt. But now they are saying like, hey, he's got his finger bent back and maybe it was adrenaline that allowed him to play through it. I mean, are we going to buy into this at all, that Matt Stafford's going to have this whole week of hyperbaric chambers and advanced whatever? Well, to like, what's going to go on there?
He's going to be on the good stuff, whatever that stuff is. He's going to be on it.
Yeah, it's true. It's going to be insufferable. Like the amount of like buildup of how Matt Stafford overcoming like a, ingrown nail, you know, on his finger.
Can I ask a quick question of you two? So we're going to watch a game in a few hours where the Niners play the Eagles. And sort of sat here now, sort of my lasting memory, as I'm sure yours is of the 49ers being absolutely kicked, you know, up the arse in the trenches by Seattle last week. And that kind of makes me want to play the Niners rather than the Rams next week. Or that would feel like a path of least resistance to get to the NFC Championship game and to host that. Yet at the same time, if they beat the Eagles today, does that change anything? Because if they go and win in Philadelphia, do you just remember week 18? Or do you watch them win in Philadelphia and think, I don't know if I want to play the Niners after all?
Griff?
Yeah, no, I hear that. I don't know. I just feel like the Niners are so injured. I would always be afraid of Kyle Shanahan in the single elimination game. So long as his receivers are relatively healthy and Purdy's relatively healthy, I'd still be afraid of him. I don't know. It's, I kind of just have, like, Rob, what you said earlier, like, just they play their player. They're going to play who they're going to play. That's just kind of the mentality I have right now.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so the Eagles are interesting because they're kind of unknown to us in terms of how we would interact with them as a team, as a Seahawks would, because we, the Niners and Rams are familiar foes, right? Mm-hmm. The Eagles are kind of, the Eagles have been good for a while. Like, we know who they are, but we haven't really played them in a while. So, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I look, it's not, it's probably not ideal to have the only options be NFC West rivals as your two, you know, the teams you're going to face, because there's, there's something that is absolutely the worst. If you end your season, you know, at home against a rival, like, that's just the worst way. Right. At the same time, I look at the 49ers and I look at the Rams and I'm like, give me the 49ers like 100 times out of 100. If you're choosing like one game, you got to win. No question at all. And the 49ers come in here and they, I don't think it would be the same game. I also feel like the Seahawks offense left a lot more on the table in this game, this last matchup, than the 49ers did. Even if the 49ers made some adjustments, look, the 49ers played healthy with Nick Bosa, Fred Warner, you know, Kittle, Trent Williams in the first week of the season. It took a touchdown at the very end of the game to get 17 points. So this isn't a one game thing. It's now a 3-game thing where the 49ers haven't been able to score more than 17 points against Mike McDonald's defense. Give me that matchup every time. But look, I mean, the Rams, I don't think the Rams storyline has been discussed enough about how their defense has gone backwards. Griff, you and I talked about it a little bit, but Rob, I mean, this is a defense that, like, we've all been hand-wringing about the Seahawks offense taking a step back since the first Rams game. And it's real. It has taken a step back. But at least there's been something that's gotten better. The run game's gotten better. The screen game's gotten better. And they've won every one of those games. The Rams defense has gotten twice as worse, if that makes sense, as the Seahawks offense over the same period of time. And they haven't won all of their games over that stretch. Like, do you think that there's maybe a chance for the Seahawks to not have a game against the Rams where they lose the turnover battle by 3? Like they have in both of the games so far this year?
It's undeniable that sort of watching that Falcons game and the Panthers game, which I watched for the Rams. I didn't watch most of the Arizona game. I kind of had it on Red Zone when they played them in Week 18. But you didn't feel the Rams defense. Like they genuinely felt just very, very average, and that they could be had. And I suppose it's simply that the only time we've seen Seattle have their way with that defense is pretty much at the end of the game, like in the last game, like it, where they had that fantastic long drive. And then it's not just that they get the touchdown, they get the 2-point conversion. When you see Jacoby Brissett moving the ball quite well on them, when you see Kirk Cousins and Bijan Robinson moving the ball very easily on them, when you see the Panthers moving the ball very easily on them, it's very hard to sort of see them as some kind of major threat. And the other thing is like, I don't know what you guys thought. I didn't feel Jared Verse yesterday or Byron Young. Mm-hmm. Like there was no like, oh my word, like Jared Verse is just a play away from breaking this game open. It wasn't that at all. Like it felt when the Panthers made mistakes, it was why on 4th and 1 or 3rd and 3 are you having Bryce Young dropping back 10 yards and trying to scramble to his right? Why are you not just running it twice? Why are you not just running it once? Why are you not doing different concepts? Why that pass to Chuba Hubbard's no good, but could he have caught it anyway? And then, you know, those kind of things. It wasn't necessarily that the Rams were doing stuff to influence that game on defense. And their secondary is there to be targeted. And that's the surprising thing, is every team and everybody who watches the Rams say you can get after their secondary. And yet that is the secondary that is taken the ball off Sam Darnold 6 times. I've just got to hope that whatever the mental block there was with Shuler and this defense for Sam Darnold has been kicked into touch by the way that last game finished. Because if you just play sensible percentages football against this Rams team, which is what they did in the first game and just couldn't finish their drives, there's no reason why you couldn't win this game. You're not going to hammer the Rams, but the Seahawks are very capable of, for example, doing what the Eagles did to the Rams in the playoffs last season, which is, yeah, that was a close game and Stafford had a chance at the end to win it. but they kind of kept them bottled up somewhat. And it was only late in the game that Stafford was driving to try and create an upset there. That's the kind of game that you'd love to see from Seattle if they play them next week. It's just be in somewhat control of it, be ahead of the scoreboard. Yes, you're going to be tested at some point. Matt Stafford's going to ask a few questions, and maybe late on he will threaten to win it. But that's when you've got to be the top defense in the NFL, and that's when you've got to finish.
Griff, I've been looking at like some numbers on the Rams defense, and something stuck out to me. This includes this last game against the Panthers. So the run defense is one of the things that's really fallen off. And so if you look since week 13, they are 21st in the NFL in EPA per rush. And one of the, this is what really got my attention is this is typically a light box team. Like that's their thing. They play with four down linemen and they play with dime a ton. They played like 60% dime, I think, the first time they played the Seahawks, right? Well, they played a 32% stacked box rate against the Panthers yesterday. 32%, which is the highest since week six for them when they played the Ravens. Like their other box stuff, stacked box rate have been like 6%, 20%, 10%, 0%. Like they are not a stacked box. So they were 32% yesterday and they still gave up a plus 0.12 EPA per rush against the Panthers. This was a question with the Rams last year. Could they stop the run? Puna Ford was their, solve all. And it looked like that was working pretty much up until the first Seahawks game. The Seahawks actually had one of their most efficient run games in the last 10 years against the Rams. Mm-hmm. And so there's this thing with the run defense. I'm curious, when you look at the Rams structure, is that potentially a place that could be a real difference this time?
Yeah, definitely. They have a light D-line. Even when they were playing well, they have a light D-line. Like you said, they were playing a bunch too high, and they're starting to see the issues with that. So then, as you said, they're loading that box more. A lot of teams, though, that make their hay on fitting the run from too high because the mechanics are different than it is from one high, and then they try to be a one high team. In theory, it should be easier when you're rolling one of the safeties down and you're stacking the box and you've got a defender for every gap formed by the offense. But I think it's seen as basic to fit the run from one high and therefore easier. But a lot of the fundamentals kind of get taken for granted. So I see a lot of undisciplined play from them, guys working across face when they shouldn't, which is what you should do when you're playing it too high because you're down a man and you have to accommodate the fact that you're outnumbered. But in some ways, undisciplined one high is going to be worse than undisciplined two high for kind of like, I don't know, paradoxical reasons. Because if everyone thinks, oh, I'm the A-gap player, I have the A-gap. I only play the B-gap if the B-gap player somehow gets blocked into the A-gap. So when you have that mentality of I only have one gap, and then if one guy works into the wrong gap, then the gap becomes unaccounted for, like mentally, even though there's more bodies near it. Whereas when you're in too high, if someone crosses face, you already have a mindset of I might need to play from the A to the C or A to the B. So that mentality for the second level of I have more than one gap to be mentally aware of kind of goes out the window when you're in one high. So you have a lot of guys, like multiple guys in one gap, zero guys in the other gap. And then also just the D-line is they're people are putting more bodies up on the line of scrimmage against them. That's also why they're playing more one highs, because they're facing heavier personnel packages and they just don't have the raw anchor. They don't have the literal mass to hold the line of scrimmage. And then again, like the second level, their eyes aren't trained to be the right type of disciplined. They're more disciplined and too high when it's harder again, ironically. So I think it's something that they're not going to fix until the offseason, really, when they kind of have to reset. At this point, I mean, Shula likes to zone blitz. He likes to run blitz. But he hasn't really – well, it hasn't really been to great effect. So maybe just be a different game plan. I'm not sure. But Shula is a problem solver, like credit to him. That's what he does. But he hasn't solved this problem yet. So I don't know. Maybe it'll be different single game elimination, playing a team that is not the Panthers. We'll see.
Rob, I got to say, I got to know. when the 49ers game kicks off against the Eagles, what's your head going to be wanting to happen and what's your heart going to be wanting to happen?
You know, I mean, my head always wants to root against the 49ers. So, I mean, there would be an element of that going on. I told myself I was going to just enjoy this weekend, and I haven't enjoyed any of the games so far. I feel like I was the same way.
Honestly, same. Yes.
I spend the whole time sort of looking it through a Seahawks lens. And I suppose what will happen is if the Eagles look really good, I'll be thinking, oh no, I don't want them catching fire, and I'll be worried about that. Or if the Niners look good, I'm thinking, oh, they're going to come to Seattle with this momentum, and then I'll probably like switch those thoughts around and think, yeah, but these guys are playing this weekend, we're not. So next weekend, we're going to be rested and we've got a lot more time to prepare for these games. I genuinely have just been all over the place with these playoff games. And I just want to wish the next week away, frankly. I just want it to be next Saturday or Sunday and the Seahawks be playing. I want to know. I've kind of ready for answers as to... I do feel as if I don't know how good this Seahawks team is. I think they're really good. And I, you know, you've highlighted the DVOA rankings, and that is always reassuring when you sort of see those and as good as they are. And I want to believe that they're really good. But I've always been one of those kind of people who will never quite believe that their team, whether it's the NFL or any other sport for that matter, is the best or is a great team until they're lifting a trophy. and I'm probably going to be that way until they either get to the Super Bowl or win it. And I just want it so badly. Like I just really want, from the last two Super Bowl experiences, so that 2 week buildup of previewing the game and looking ahead to the game and sort of listening to every podcast talking about the Super Bowl. I want to live through that again. I want to do streams about Super Bowl. I want to dream of the Seahawks lifting another trophy. I feel as if this is an opportunity, not just for the Seahawks, but for probably about four or five different teams here that they probably never would have expected. I went back yesterday when the Packers were winning, and I read what I wrote immediately after the Packers game last season. And it was all stuff about, where do you go from here? Like, that was so bad. Like, how does this team get back to championship contention? If you'd have told me that day that in 12 months' time, Seattle will be the number one seed in the NFC and Mahomes wouldn't be in the playoffs, I'd be like,
or Burrow.
What happened?
And or Jackson.
This is a great opportunity. And I feel like the opportunity is more significant for the Seahawks and the Broncos because they're the number one seeds and only have to win two home games to get to the Super Bowl. I'm just so desperate for it to happen. And everything that I watch this weekend is through that lens of just desperation of trying to work out what is best for the Seahawks when, as I said earlier, it's probably best not to worry about it. I'm very good at giving other people advice. Don't worry about it. just we're going to play, they're going to play, whilst not taking that advice myself. And that's probably what I'm going to be thinking when I'm watching the Niners game later.
That's life. Griff, see, I'm very emotional. Like I use numbers and analysis to give myself some emotional buffer to explore my team and the game. But like I'm in the camp of fuck the 49ers forever. I will always want them to lose. I always want the worst possible things to happen to them, even if it's better for the Seahawks if they win. And I think there's a lot of people that can make the case. It's better for the Seahawks if the 49ers win today. You seem like so measured. Is there any emotion in it for you?
Yeah. Yeah.
What are you going to be feeling like during this game?
I just like you, the Schoedem fraud runs deep, you know. I like it when my enemies crumble before me just as much as you guys do. It just doesn't maybe externalize the same way.
Yeah.
I want to see the Niners lose. You know what? Here, my thing with this playoff run is I'm of two minds. I think the single best unit in the playoffs, at least in the NFC for sure, belongs to the Seahawks, which is their defense. So our defense is better than any other defense or offensive unit. So like that's the feather in our cap. That's where I have a lot of confidence. Like when your defense is just so elite and it's like even elite offense proof, because there are some elite defenses that still get, you know, bunch of yardage gets thrown on them from elite offenses, which, you know, the Rams are capable of. They kind of showed that in the second game, even though they still lost. They didn't show it in the first game though. You can control games and outcomes if you shorten the game offensively. So that's what gives me the most confidence. offensively, though, I do worry about the Seahawks' offensive regression, their own regression. There are two benchmarks. You could take the Texans game and on, even though they won that, as kind of the beginning of the crack starting to show. But then they followed up with two strong games and the Rams game happened. So it might be more useful to look at the Rams game on, like the final 7-8 games of the season. But their regression, it's not like they went from amazing to horrific. They just went from amazing to like below average. Mm-hmm. And what they regressed into was kind of what many people thought, including myself, thought their offense was going to look like more or less all year.
Yep.
So what they were from weeks 11 on to 18, I thought they were going to kind of be the whole season, and they didn't. And that's a credit to everyone involved, particularly Kubiak and Sam, and like just the amazing throws. And it's like you break apart those numbers. And Rob, I think after the Jags game, the last time I was on with you, we were talking about like, well, the play action numbers regress. And it's like they have regressed, but they just went from best all time to like regular good. So like they went from first best you've ever seen to like seventh in the league over this regression period, which seventh of the league is still great. Like that's still like 10 yards a pop, you know? It's more like they've come back down to earth in that category. And then the pure dropback numbers have been up and down, but it's mainly been the turnovers that have dropped. The success rate is still decent. So like the pitch for this team is batten down the hatches offensively. Just don't turn the ball over. Let the defense do what it does. You don't have to hit a wanton amount of explosives. If you hit a couple, great. You know, the run game might be able to help you control series a little bit, control the clock. So it's, I mean, they have a good shot for them. I do worry about the turnovers though. And I think there are reasons for why those are happening. Like reasons we can point to. I don't think it's just some like weird big game Sam Darnold thing. I think there's an actual specific reason for it. Like I don't really believe in the voodoo of like, well, like the kind of that subjective stuff, like Sam just can't do it in the big games. No, I don't think it's that he can't. He's had his worst games in big games, but there's been specific football reasons for it. I don't think it's about the mystique of a big game that's doing it to him. He might run into that in these playoffs. We'll see. But, you know, given, you know, we have to remember what our expectations were this year, right? Everything about this season has been awesome, given that. So I'm kind of coming into this relaxed and I'm using that relative to expectation kind of mindset. That's maybe why I'm coming across more calm. But when you're in the trenches and it's the third quarter and it's a one score game and every possession matters, every snap matters, yeah, I'll be sweating it out with the rest of you guys. So,
yeah, I see the Seahawks as this battleship, like, absolutely intimidating, guns a-blazing, tough, maneuverable. You don't want to see them coming. But there's this little weakness in the hull. And you know that if someone just taps on that spot, it could sink the whole damn thing. And that's kind of the life we found ourselves in with this team. And there's a lot worse places to be than on that ship.
But that describes every team, though, in the NFC.
Thank you. Right? Like you don't think that the Eagles fans are worried about what Jalen Hurts is going to do today?
Right.
Like, or what the offensive play caller is going to call today for the Eagles?
If Stafford bangs his thumb or tweaks his back wrong, it's over for them. The Rams are so top heavy.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So Griff. Let's assume for a second the Seahawks do play the Rams. How would you feel about that matchup?
It'll probably be their toughest matchup, but I still think they can. I think they can beat them. Again, I worry about the offense more so than anything. What Shula has been able to do against the Seahawks offensively. I mean, so in my mind, Sam Darnold can handle blitz design pressure, and he can handle coverage disguise, but he can't handle them at the same time. And Shula's had the acumen and the personnel to kind of live in that world where he can combine the two worlds. And that's why Sam threw a lot of his picks, and just in general, just kind of seemed erratic. And his, you could see with his feet, you know what Sam's thinking or not thinking based off what his feet are doing, even when the picture is relatively clean. So there's kind of like the spillover effect into the next snap, even if it's a simple presentation pre-snap, and that look holds post-snap. And it's like, well, this is easy. Why is he erratic? He wasn't doing that last week. It's because the previous snaps are weighing on his mind, you know, type of thing. And that's totally me projecting that onto him. I could be wrong. It could be maybe he's hurt and he's not, you know, doesn't want to tell anyone. You know what I mean? It could be anything, football reasons, right? Right. But Shula's able to create that environment. Now, again, the Rams are potentially regressing, and maybe that regression will hold. So maybe that all those things I just said won't apply. But yeah, I would be worried about the Rams. But I think kind of what I've been dangling with the offense and why they've regressed is it's not Shahid's fault, because he is a better player, but I think the Shahid trade has kind of sunk the offense a little bit because you want to get him on the field and you don't want to kick Cooper Kupp to the curb. So they're playing more 11, and they don't have a lot of under center 11 offense. Most of their 11 is shotgun. So they're spending more time in shotgun. So and then they're passing more also to accommodate to get Shahid targets. So their pass rate's gone from like 44% to like 51, 52, which is still not very high, but it's more. So now they're inviting more nickel, and within nickel, more coverage disguise and blitz disguise, you'll see. So they've kind of backed themselves into this corner of wanting to get a better player on the field, forcing them into structures and packages of which their quarterback just doesn't thrive in. He thrives in big on big environments. Now they're playing more small on small, and it's only marginally more. But in doing so, you're seeing these upticks in interceptions. And also, I think the better stat, the turnover-worthy play rate has gone up. And then just the results are following. So it's like, well, what do you do? I mean, in my mind, it's not like you should undo the Shahid trade. Like, you make that trade for this year and for the future. In my mind, you just bench Kupp and you just say, like, we're not going to be an 11 team. We're going to just say, sorry, Coop, like, we're trying to win the football game, where we need to go back and can remain in 12, 13, 21, and just let Shahid be the other receiver. It gets a little tricky there because Cubs blocking allows you to access some of those plays too. But you got to figure this out. I mean, just to illustrate this, they're throwing 7 more times per game at a shotgun. They're facing like 4 or 5 more attempts against nickel than they have. And it's like, it kind of speaks to how the combination of talent matters more than your total aggregate talent. I think they could fix this if they had a full camp with these players. Even like if you could start the year over with Shahid, they'd be able to integrate all these parts. But I don't think it's like Kubiak can't adapt. I think it's just more they're living in packages they weren't very good at earlier in the year either. And now they're being forced to spend time in those packages. So,
well, the interesting thing there is that they, that's great stuff, is they've actually gotten significantly better at running the ball out of 11. They had only negative EPA rush games in 11 personnel until the Rashid Shahid trade. And then after that, almost every game has been a positive EPA per rush game. So,
and that's the silver lining to this. So they're facing more too high. Let's check into a shotgun run. And they actually have, they're able to do that.
Yeah. So Rob, we've got this from Big Daddy Small, says, I want to see the 49ers and Rams both on the road to the Super Bowl. I want to show everyone why we are the daddy of the NFC West. For that to happen, you'd have to face the 49ers have to win today. You'd face them, and then you need the Rams to win, which would likely happen. What say you, Rob?
Well, obviously, if they win those games, it's fantastic. That's exactly how you'd want to go to the Super Bowl. But I think the problem is the risk of losing is also there as well. Because as you quite rightly said, there's nothing worse than losing to an NFC West team in the playoffs. And it'd be worse for the Niners for obvious reasons. I think we all find them more annoying than in any of the other three, the other two teams. You have to face the NFC West. But the Rams have become a little bit annoying recently. Like, I find Puka Nacua quite annoying now, especially after what happened with that ridiculous streaming thing. And then I just found it. And also that seems to have been washed over a little bit and everyone's kind of just moved on from it. I don't think that's quite right. And then McVay has felt a little bit angrier to me this year. Like, he's become a little bit easier to dislike. I've always kind of had this like almost envy of just how he's an exceptional coach. And there's just every team would want their version of Sean McVay, and Seattle kind of has that now in a defensive version of it. But this year he seemed a little bit, especially in the last few weeks, he's just seemed a little bit more stressed and a little bit more anxious and a little bit more like he was arguing Matt Stafford yesterday, and he's getting into the coaches a little bit more. And you're just thinking, okay, like when that special, that kick got blocked, do you see he was right in the face of the special teams coordinator immediately afterwards? Yes. So I wouldn't want to see him celebrate at Lumen Field either. So yeah, I'm down for it if they win, but I just, there's part of me that just doesn't want to risk that. But I suppose that's kind of a cowardly way of looking at it. So I should really just keep resorting back to the thing I've been saying is, we're just going to play who you're going to play and just hold your serve. Just get the job done. Do what you need to do. It's fascinating what Griff was saying there about their use of personnel. And maybe this video could be just sort of sent. Hey, Clint, if you've not had much time in the last couple of days because you've been doing 10 different interviews, maybe have a little watch of what was said there so you can adjust accordingly for these next two playoff games. Because the most important thing is not for Cooper Kupp to be on the field or Rashid Shaheed, for that matter. Look, I've got no issue. I think Shaheed's got something like 2 catches in the last 3 games. I know he was injured in the Carolina game. If you have to play, if you have to bench him as a receiver and play Kupp and to get into your personnel, it gives you the best chance to win. I've got no problem with that. Do what you need to do to win, not do what you do to get Rashid Shaheed on the field.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Rob, really quick, the reason why Sean seems so like pissed off all the time and stressed out is because he knows this is his last ride with Stafford, and then he's looking at quarterback hell potentially this after this year in all likelihood. He knows this is his last good shot, I think.
Do you think so? Like, I don't know that I like Stafford at MVP year, he's gonna hang it up after that.
His body is breaking. I mean, it might be his last good year, like his last shot to, like, he might be fine next year, but I think McVay knows this is as good of a shot he's going to have for a while, potentially, and he's feeling that stress.
The nice human in me is like, oh, he's acting this way because he had a baby recently and he's not getting any sleep and he's, you know, having trouble. The mean part of me is like the roid rage, coke, you know, head kind of sideline bizarreness that we're seeing. Like in that Panthers game, he kept like, he was, every time they score, he was like so demonstrative and swearing and like, I'm like, dude, you're the head coach. Yeah. Like show some like you've been there before. I don't know. Like yeah. it was a little bit much, but we'll see. We will see. I guess for what it's worth, my take on this is you got to beat the best to be the best. And I think the Seahawks, I know the Seahawks can win the Super Bowl. I have no doubts that the Seahawks can win the Super Bowl. Will they win the Super Bowl? I don't know. Like, I will always come back to the 2013 team, which I think is the best team I've ever watched play as a Seahawks fan. And they got to a Super Bowl by the tip of Richard Sherman's fingers. Like, yeah. It was so close to not happening. So, and I thought the Seahawks in 2005 were clearly the best team. They didn't win. Yeah. So like you're at the 1 yard line, 2014, you didn't win. Like it takes so many things to get through this gauntlet. And, you know, it's a pleasure that we're going to get to see it. Hopefully the guys, I think that the nice thing is I don't have much doubt that they're going to be ready for it. Like that, I don't have much doubt over it. And we'll just see what the outcome is. Yeah. All right. I've kept you guys for an hour here. I got a couple of quick things. Detail oriented wants you to smile, Griff. I see your smile all the time. And then Jacoby says, in my opinion, the craziest part of the Greg Olsen commentating was how it sounded like he was praising the Rams and McVay all the while they were playing his former team. Yeah. A lot of people were commenting on this. He is like a famous Panther. I almost like wonder if he felt like he needed to overcompensate for that, but
I wondered that too.
It just sounded like he was, I mean, this is a guy that from what I understand actually admitted to texting Sean McVay about trying to work for him. I mean,
that's what I was going to say. So like when Olsen gets so like grandstandy and like when he's doing it and he's like really laying on thick his knowledge and stuff, He looked at John Lynch's career trajectory arc, and I think he's trying to fast track his way into some team's front office. I think that's what he's trying to do with this.
That is a, it's good take.
There's also, I think, I do think that Twitter is has an influence on these things. And I do think that there are players, analysts, pundits who are influenced by the amount of praise and that they do get. And I mean, like, I just wonder a little bit whether Greg Olsen is almost so encouraged sometimes by, because he does get a lot of people love Greg Olsen as an analyst and think he is the best. He's kind of a you either love him or hate him type. And I think it's encouraged him somewhat to broadcast the way he does. But you've also got, like, I don't know if you saw this, Shiel Kapadia suggested a couple of weeks ago that he should be the Giants' next head coach, and then said and cited his the way that he broadcasts and his analytical mind and the way that he's on top of everything as evidence for him being the Giants' head coach. And I sat there and thought, it's no wonder this guy is sort of going as over the top as he is when people are saying that because he's broadcasting a certain way, he should be the Giants' head coach. Like, there's nothing to suggest that he should be the Giants.
Rob, I think you're looking at this the wrong way, man. This could lead to some really interesting job offers for you over there in the EPL.
Well, the thought of walking into a team and going, "Hello, everybody, I'm your new coach. I've commentated for 20 years." It's unbelievable. I don't want to go too much on about Greg Olsen, but I've never liked his style of broadcasting, I have to say.
Yeah, I'm not a fan either. I will remind people, the last thing before I let the guys go, we got a couple super chats here from Leo Berry. This is over on the Venmo super chats. Says, "Hey, Brian, I'm going to the divisional round game thanks to HB Ticks. So figured I'd drop a little platform fee here. Thanks for all the great content over the years. So cool and well deserved to see the community grow. Keep up the great work." Another one from Aaron, who also used HB Ticks to sell or buy tickets. Right now, the Seahawks fans are the only ones buying tickets still, because other fan bases do not know that they're going to be playing here for the next few hours. So go buy tickets for this game. If you're going to buy tickets, buy them now. They're going to increase in price. I guarantee you the price is going to go up in a few hours. So go buy your tickets as a Seahawks fan. Sell your tickets as a Seahawks fan. If you want to use hbticks.com, great. It's free. I don't take any fees for it. The whole point is just get as many friggin' Seahawks fans in the stands as possible. If the 49ers win, if you don't think all that Bay Area money is going to gobble up every $2,000 ticket out there, you're crazy. So go buy them now. Sell them now. If you care about the Seahawks, do it. So that's my encouragement for you guys. Rob, what do you have coming up on Seahawks Draft Blog?
Well, you know, I'd rather just spend a bit of time saying what a great initiative that is. And I think it's, you know, kudos to you, Brian, you know, to do it on the off your own back for no financial reward is admirable. And, you know, it might be something that the team should sort of talk to you about and sort of work together. And I don't know if you're already doing that, because it's so important. Like, if they play the Rams next week, it's not going to matter as much for obvious reasons. There are not as many Ram fans out there. If the Niners are coming to Seattle next week, we've all seen what happens when the Niners play in Seattle in the last couple of games. There's a lot of red in the stands. So if you are thinking of going to this game, I would be buying it. I would be logging on there now if I was in the Pacific Northwest and getting a ticket or within striking range of getting to that game. If you've got a chance, get to that game. You know, make sure that is a home field advantage of the maximum possibility, and don't let those Niners fans in. Do not have them. We don't want to hear anything about the Niners when that game's kicked off. We just want to hear noise from the Seahawks fans. So please get involved with that and head over to Brian's site and make sure that there's as many Seahawks fans as possible for that game.
Appreciate you for that, Rob. Griff, is Seattle Overload ever coming back? Are we going to get another episode ever?
So it is, actually. It is coming back. And it's been just around the corner for about, again, 4 months running. We gave up like 2 months ago. Like, look, we'll reconvene. We'll see what our schedules are like. We've had things come up. So I'm not going to say exactly when, but this week we actually have hard plans to make it work. So regular season recap, playoff preview, Seattle Overload coming to a computer screen near you here in the next 5 days, but I won't give you the exact day. It'll just pop up on you. So
love it. Love it. And you know, I know people are dying to hear your latest take on Nicki Minaj.
Oh, yeah.
Do you want to share that before we go?
Sure. So it's funny because I never, so everyone knows that I did not like the pick at the time of the pick, right? I didn't like, and I used the word bad football player, especially, but that was specific to his college film for the sake of the college film in and of itself. How that projects, how you view a player as a player versus as a prospect are two different things, in my opinion. I put a third round grade on him. So that's to indicate that, okay, if I thought he was a bad prospect, I would have put a fifth or sixth round grade on him, right? And I also, all these qualifiers, if he should go anywhere, should go to a good coaching staff, Seattle's the best spot for him, yada, yada. So I said all those things. I never actually made a prediction as to how he would play in Seattle, especially year one, which is to say that if he was playing like a level where everyone would agree was bad, which he's not, but if he was, I wouldn't be taking credit for that because I never predicted that outright either. I very tepidly, very purposefully, conservatively did not make a prediction about how he would play as a rookie. I just said he's a project. Let's see what happens given all these things that I thought I saw in college. So, and given that I was so vocal about it, I made a point to kind of, you know, journal, if you will, his play in all these different categories. Cause when you're playing nickel, you're asked to do so many things. There's so many things you could do well or do poorly. So I was just trying to be comprehensive about it. I'll just characterize what I see. I'll preface though that I don't think he's playing as well as maybe the coverage suggests. So I guess I'm a minority there, which is fine. The first four, like when the Jags game happened, the first four or five games on up until that Falcons game, I would have said that I think he's doing the cornerback stuff of nickel play really well. And then he's doing the linebacker stuff really poorly. And then ever since that Falcons game on, I think it's reversed. I think the coverage has waned. I think his one-on-one technique is starting to break down. I don't really understand why. I have thoughts, but it would be conjecture. And then I think his linebacker stuff, keying in the run, keying in the box, has like skyrocketed, like exponential growth. And like when you watch film every single week, there are some things that you just can't not notice. So like if it was a run play up until that Falcons game, he would be the last person in the box to pick his play side foot up and put it back down. And that would get him in the wrong gap very frequently. If you counted the amount of 8 yard plus runs they had, he was responsible for like 2/3 of them when I was charting them for 3 games. And that doesn't really reflect in the aggregate because like their run defense is so good. So in my mind, it doesn't make sense to emphasize this, like nitpicking a player when like the whole is so good. That would just be weird energy from me, in my opinion. Then that Falcons game happened and the TFLs weren't just fun and exciting. So it's a big, fast, strong body going, you know, shooting the gap really quickly. It's how quickly he diagnosed those plays. And so I mean, I think that's huge. That's huge development. When I say coverage wise though, like just to give an example, cause people kind of guffaw when I express any sort of like, I don't think he's quite as good. And I get a lot of, well, how could you possibly say that? Look at the stat sheet. Well, just to kind of give a quick like cross section of what I'm talking about, like he's given up of all defensive backs, he's given up the second most yards to tight ends in the league this year. He's given up the worst EPA per target to tight ends. And when you talk about a nickel, especially a big nickel, the primary function of what you're giving, like the hallmark characteristic, in my opinion, is that you got to be a matchup guy, especially with tight ends. He might be the worst defensive back covering tight ends of the league this year, at least statistically. So again, that doesn't really reflect in the aggregate because the pass defense is like third best in the league right now. And I'm not emphasizing Nick is not doing very well against tight ends because that would be weird given how things are going and how I think he's growing. I want to accentuate the positives. He's doing so well doing the linebacker stuff, which honestly, I will be honest with you, I did not think he would ever do. I just thought he was doomed there. And the fact that he is reading his keys and firing off his keys so quickly, like, what does that mean for year two? Now, I also said, though, that I thought the best characteristics of his was his one-on-one technique slot in college. And the fact that it started off well and then, in my view, regressed, I feel like that's doomed, not doomed, but fated positively to positively regress and normalize next year. And I think, again, nickels, safeties are asked to do so many things that it's okay that there might be a little bit of a roller coaster. And then inevitably I get the response like, well, don't you think you're being too hard on him? He's a rookie, give him time to grow. And I'm like, that's all I'm saying. He's a project and he's growing in all these areas. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of a Rorschach test. Like if you see positives, embrace the positives. If you see the negatives, just say, well, he's a rookie. Like I have an opinion that rookie years don't matter anyway, as far as what year two looks like. Look at Boye Mafe in year one versus year two, total non-entity in year one. Then he makes a big jump in year two. Look at Derek Hall year one versus year two, non-entity to what he is now. And he's gotten better even thereafter. He could be a completely different player in all positive ways next year. So I am a little concerned, just for the interim, only for the time, this period right now, the one-on-one coverage. I guess what I'm talking about is his initial footwork to the release of the receiver is essentially wrong, like almost every time. So if he's reading an inside release, he'll drop step when he should slide step, for example, things like that. And then what that does is like that Kyle Pitts catch on that corner route against the Falcons, that big one, even though it looked like tight coverage, that's a landmark timing throw. He never disrupted the timing of the route because he never contacted the receiver at the mesh point. On that same, because he drop stepped, a 45 degree drop step instead of a lateral 180 degree step. On that same snap, you have Devin Witherspoon facing an inside release also on the top of the screen. And you see him make the correct lateral 6-inch lateral step. And by the time the receiver meshes with him, like when they kind of crosses his horizontal plane, Devin Witherspoon has two hands on his chest. When Kyle Pitts crosses, meshes with Eamon Worry only has one hand on his outside shoulder plate or outside shoulder pad. So that right there, like he lost the rep right there. And Devin Witherspoon is like the perfect juxtaposition for what it should look like. That's stuff that Eamon Worry the previous 3-4 games was doing well. So it's just like, can he put all this together? And again, there's been so much asked of him. It's okay that it's a little up and down. All I'm saying is that it's a little up and down. As far as what that means for how you view the future, by all means, embrace a positive perspective. I mean, I'm an optimist by nature. So I think, you know, he could totally be Kyle Hamilton next year. I just don't think he's Kyle Hamilton or Derwin James right now.
Good stuff from Griff. I will not dare to ask you about your Drake Thomas takes, who's one of my favorite
players. He's gotten better. I was so hard on him. I mean, that guy is seeing everything right now.
He is.
I wouldn't trust him to match guys, but he doesn't need to. He's been good.
He's been very, very good. All right, guys, thank you so much for spending your Sunday mornings, Monday evenings, whatever time it is for each of you. Appreciate you both. Make sure you check out Rob at Seahawks Draft Blog, Griff at Seattle Overload. Boys, we got a playoff game coming next week. Looking forward to it. All right. That was Griff Sturgeon and Mr. Rob Staton. Good to have those guys on as usual. If you haven't noticed, I got some new gear on here. I've got this Seahawks hat, which I absolutely love. I got this nice JSN hoodie. I got this division champ hat. Got this all at simplyseattle.com. You can go to simplyseattle.com, use promo code HawkBlogger15. Get you 15% off the best Seattle sports gear you want to find. It's all awesome up there. So go there now while you can. We're working on some special promos as well, but get there, get the great deal, get some gear for yourself. It's really, really nice stuff. This sweatshirt is amazing. I'm going to wear this a lot. Also, if you have not already gone over to the Sleeper app, grabbed it, download it, do it now. Use promo code Hawks. You get up to $100 match on your first deposit. Terms and conditions do apply, but see Sleeper's terms of use for details. Currently operational over 25 states. Check out Sleeper today. And folks, another thing here, if you are having trouble sleeping at all, if like Rob was talking about, he couldn't sleep because he wanted a certain matchup for the team, I got a deal for you. You should take advantage of while you can. Hey, folks, I'm guessing you could see me, but I cannot see you because I am wearing the best sleep mask out there on the market, the Manta Sleep Mask. It is 100% blackout. I cannot see a thing. And one of the cool things with this model, this is the Manta Sound Sleep Mask. It's got these really cool Bluetooth speakers that adjust right over your ears, connects to your phone. You can play music, you can play white noise, whatever you like. There could be a 49ers fan right next to you. Doesn't matter. And let's face it, sometimes during the football season, you just need to recover. You need to take a nap. You need to block out the world. The Manta Sleep Mask is the best thing to do it. And if you use my code HAWKS, you will get 10% off your purchase over at Manta Sleep. Don't make the same mistake I did. Don't look at other sleep masks. Manta Sleep is the best. Buy it. You won't regret it.
Honestly, really, really great product. I love my Manta Sleep Mask. I bring it on the road with me, use it at home. And if you don't know, actually 100% blackout conditions for sleep is a huge part of good quality sleep. So having a great sleep mask, especially one that has a little white noise on it. So if you're on the road or maybe you're on a plane and you just want to like block out the noise, it's great. Bluetooth's right into your phone. You can play music, you can play white noise, whatever it is on it. Great product. So go over to Manta Sleep and use the promo code there. All right, folks, that will do it for this edition of Hawk Blogger Mornings. Honestly, I could keep going because I've got so many thoughts about how this is going to end up, but we're going to have a big week ahead of us. So let's all enjoy our time. I've got tomorrow will probably just be me. I don't think I'm going to have a guest on tomorrow because there's going to be a lot of getting into the matchups. But then throughout the week, it is going to be absolute pandemonium. We're going to have, obviously, Matt Hasselbeck on Tuesday. We're going to have Seahawks Collective, as we always do, Tuesday night. I will have, depending on who, we'll do our first look show on Wednesday and figure out who will join me for that. And then we'll have Real Hawk Talk. We're going to have the OG crew, Nathan, Evan, Jeff, all there Wednesday evening. Gonna have Brett Coleman join on Thursday, as well as Mina Kimes. Gonna have Brian Baldinger potentially also Thursday. We might have a triple guest Thursday. We'll have Mike Sando and Dave Bowling on Friday. All this stuff. Oh, and by the way, Jeffrey Dean Morgan will be joining the show again on Friday. So it is a lot of great stuff coming your way. If you haven't already signed up to support us at patreon.com/hawkblogger, great place to do it. You get ad-free audio of this show. You also get access to the Discord server where people are hanging out and talking all the time. And you'll get verified over at HB Ticks. So a great triple threat for that. Folks that have been supporting over at venmo.com/Brian-Nemhauser, appreciate that as well. All right, everybody, have a great rest of your Sunday. I will be back with you tomorrow. There's a chance I'll be back today. Who knows? But for now, we'll assume it's tomorrow. Until then, take care.